Tuesday night edition of the pod. Going to get to maybe the most anticipated offseason, although Philly is probably up there at this point as well due to the success they had this year. The LA Lakers offseason outlook here. So I think the place to start for them in particular is with the cap sheet and what some of the scenarios are for them. Why don't you take that away, Mr. LaRue?
So if the Lakers let all of their unrestricted free agents go and then Travis Ware, who's restricted, so that would keep Randall's hold on the books, they have about $48 million in space. So that is enough for one max of any size and then a little bit more, and then, of course, the room mid-level exception. If they wanted to stretch Wall Deng, so he has 2 years remaining, so he would stretch the remaining money over five seasons, that would add $10.6 million to their 2018 space. That would put them at about 60. $60 million is not enough for two maxes if one of them or both is above the, you know, is at the 10 plus threshold, which is the 35% max, but it is enough for two of the 7 to 9 max, or you know with the lower one as well.
Yeah, and then if they wanted to remove Randall's cap hold and stretch Deng, that would get them to where they could fit both of those. And if they could somehow trade Deng and get that obligation off entirely, then the absolute maximum they'd be looking at, and that would leave them with just their 25th pick, Kyle Kuzma, Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram, and Lonzo Ball on the roster, they could get to $76.9 million estimated, based on the $101 million cap estimate, which may actually go up just a little bit because we've had kind of a long playoffs in the conference finals, although maybe we won't in the finals. That remains to be seen. My guess is that getting off of Luol Deng would not necessarily be realistic for them. Now, maybe what they might say is, all right, we've got 25 this year. If we know for sure that we are getting LeBron James, whoever we draft with 25 this year, and our first rounder next year, we might give up both of those, which you can do once you've already drafted the guy. You could give that pick up. And they say, hey, you know what? We're going to have LeBron. It's not really worth it to quibble about this pick that's going to be in the 20s next year. So if we give both of those up, maybe that can get us off of Luol Deng. Maybe a team like the Hawks would be interested in doing that, or the Bulls. Do you think that if that were the case, and you know, we're going down the LeBron road already here, but you think if that were the case, Danny, that would be enough to get them off of Luol Deng completely?
Oof. The problem fundamentally is that if the Lakers trade their 2019 first round pick, the expectation by the acquiring team has to be that that pick is not good. You know, it has to be, you know, it might not be 30, but I would say you would expect 26 to 30 because they're doing that for a reason. And those picks are nice, certainly, but I think that's probably too much.
What
I was actually thinking of,
too much to give up or.
Sorry, not enough to give up.
So you,
as the, let's say, as
you're the acquiring team, you would not do that at that point to take on.
Correct.
And Deng, as we know, has $36.8 million remaining over the next 2 years. So that's a lot of money, obviously.
Well, and this gets into something that I wanted to talk with you about, of just kind of one of the mistakes of this Lakers season. And it could just be that this was inevitable either way. I don't know, because Luke Walton has a better sense of this than I do, obviously. That because of how the season went, Luol Deng does not really have much alive money on his contract. You know, we talk about dead money. And so there was a way of thinking about Deng that, like, okay, there's a lot of bad money around the league right now. And so if the Lakers get to the point where all they're going to do is stretch him, then it doesn't really make that much of a difference how good the player is, because this isn't like the amnesty provision where if somebody claims him off waivers, you know, they take some amount. It's not like that at all. So at that point, it becomes better to trade Deng for theoretically an inferior player who makes a little bit less money. And then the idea being like, hey, you'd rather have Luol Deng at, let's say, $2 million per year than this other guy who sucks. The problem is, I don't think Deng has shown enough for, let's say, like a Miles Plumlee contract, or even his former teammate and 2016 co-signee, Timofey Mozgov. I'm not completely sure either of those teams is willing to take a couple million dollar hit just to make that difference, which would give the Lakers a little bit less money to stretch.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. And in case you need a reminder of Luol Deng's season, played one game. He started the first game of the year, played 13 minutes, was one of two from the field, and then never played a single minute the rest of the year. What there's, that's got to be, like, for someone who is healthy, that's got to be completely unprecedented. Perhaps they reached the point, because remember how injured they were at the end, and like Brandon Ingram was playing ridiculous minutes and Lonzo was playing ridiculous minutes. So they just didn't have anybody on the wing at all. You know, they're starting Kuzma at the three. You have to think that maybe Deng just was like, hey, you know what? I'm checked out here. I don't even want to be playing, and that they kind of acceded to his wishes. But nonetheless, man, that is that's pretty remarkable. Let's get back to their cap space situation, though. Another possible scenario is that they are able to get rid of Deng, but then they want to keep Randall's $12.4 million cap hold on the books. Well, you do that, and you're at $65.3 million in space, which is just barely enough to fit in, say, LeBron James at the 35% max. That's looking right now like it's going to be $35.4 million. And actually, no, you're not quite there enough. It would be $30.3 million. Maybe if the cap bumps up a little bit, you can just barely get there. And that would leave Randall's cap hold on the books, which is useful because now you have him as a restricted free agent and you have bird rights and you can re-sign him. I think he's someone that it would be nice to be able to re-sign.
Well, there's another thing there just with the structure of everything. If Randall is willing to take a salary less than that hold,
yeah, he's
say
not.
It's 11 million, even if maybe
at some point he would, I'll put it this way. I find it very unlikely he would take a salary less than that hold to in enough time to facilitate free agent signing. We'll put it that way. I think that's a fair statement.
I'll push back a little bit, but not too hard, just because the moratorium is long and by the end of it, but not at the beginning. And LeBron can, if it's LeBron, he can make this simpler by just waiting long enough that the market has already kind of settled. But I just don't think there are going to be that many offers above the mid-level exception for anybody. So like maybe Randall gets one of those. It's certainly possible he does, but I wouldn't feel assured of that at all.
Yeah, but I still think he would just, he still has the leverage of potentially taking the qualifying offer and dragging things out. You know, I mean, we've seen restricted free agents able to get more money just by kind of going down to the start of the season. And also you look at it as, well, if they kept his cap hold on the books this long and they got LeBron James on the team, like they actually need that body. They need him to like play and win games. And so, you know, just to say, hey, I'm not going to sign this offer and play, you know, he would have some leverage there. In any event, you know, or also just because, you know, he and Paul George have the same agent as well. So if George comes there, you have to imagine that they would like do Julius a solid and pay him a little bit more, especially because really you're done with cap space as this Lakers team. And so it's kind of, all right, another couple million a year for Julius Randle, that's just fine. And considering that the Lakers, think of how much money the Lakers, Danny, must have like banked in profits these last few years when they're basically, you know, weren't anywhere close to the tax. They're around the cap every year. So their salary, you know, that's basically an extra $20 million that they've been banking. So I think they're totally fine paying the tax going forward here. They've certainly done that in the past. But enough of that, I guess.
Well, so I think a transition we could use is to talk about what I think is the other big idea with the Lakers, which is more on the negative side. You know, we talked about what if LeBron comes. Where is the line for just choosing to roll over some or all of that money? Because the Lakers don't really have many increased expenses. Of all their young guys that are coming in, Brandon Ingram will be the first to get a raise. That raise will come in 2020. So they could theoretically spend a similar amount of money, depending on what happens with Julius Randle, in either 2018, 2019, or split between the two. So I would assume we would both have LeBron and Paul George above that threshold. Then it gets tough. I mean, let's say Kevin Durant is over there, obviously, if he were choosing to come there. But so then you get into two guys, I think, that are a little bit complicated with this, and it might depend on the guys above them, which is Chris Paul and DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah, Cousins, there had been talk before the Achilles that he could potentially be a target. They don't really have a center on the roster, of course, but now, you know, maybe he could come there, but I really don't think you want to spend big money on him. You know, if it's, and I'm not even sure this is a Lakers team that thinks really big. They've got Kawhi Leonard as well. We can talk about potential trade scenarios involving him. But to me, I don't think that Cousins is someone I would be interested in unless it's like, you know, just a 1 year deal for the max or something. If they strike out on everyone else, or close to the max, you know, 1 year, $25 million or something like that. It is interesting though, Dan, because we talked about this in the same way for Philly, of this idea of like rolling over your cap space if you don't get the guy that you want. So that definitely is something that I think could happen You know, Chris Paul, hard to believe to me that he's going to leave Houston at this point, especially with some of the comments that Daryl Morey made after the season was over in terms of the fact that they're really expect to bring back this team and that they're realize it's going to cost and that they're willing to pay that. So the chances of Paul leaving seem low. I mean, Cousins, I'm sure if they offered him enough money, he would go for it. It's just a question of, you know, how healthy he's going to be. So I would not be very interested in Cousins, especially when you have all these other young guys that you're trying to build with and develop a culture for. So I think they would be in the one-year deal. I mean, you know, maybe you could even see Brooke Lopez coming back then on a one-year deal. You could even see KCP coming back again on another one-year deal as well at that point. The other nice thing about waiting until 2019 is then you can just stretch Luol Deng and it's no problem. You know, really the only person they probably would have to eat into 2019 space for would be Randle. But if they can get him for, you know, maybe a little bit more than what his cap would have been this year, the cap goes up to 108. You can just stretch Deng at that point. It's not that bad, or trade him. He'll only have 1 year left on his deal. So the mechanics of doing it are easier. And then you also have a better idea of kind of what's around and what you need in terms of these young guys, how good Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram are going to be.
Yeah, so they have to be really flexible to me. I would draw the line around where you did. So LeBron and Paul George are clear above it. For me, Cousins would be below it, largely because if it's a multi-year contract, just because there's so much uncertainty with him. And so if that ends up being, you know, if he's just not the same guy again, and that money ends up being dead or close to it, then that makes it a lot harder to sign whoever else you want. And, you know, that's a complicated circumstance, so you have to kind of play both sides of it. But the Lakers are fortunate that I don't think there is any specific player that they would really lose out on if, let's say, those guys don't go there, or they're going the one-year route. They're going after the players who fell through the cracks in the market anyway. So they're not losing out on those one-year contracts because the guys who are signing those are waiting around to see if they can get a better offer.
I wanted to go back to the potential LeBron scenario here. We can talk a little bit more about like who might make sense if they don't get him. But if they do get him, presumably that means that it's going to be Paul George or someone else pretty damn good coming there. If I'm LeBron James, I don't think that a team with me and Paul George and then all these young dudes is ready to compete for a champion. But what if I say, hey, you know what? I'm going to come here, but now you got to trade away either Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram and bring in, you know, maybe not another star, but another star, or certainly, you know, Kawhi Leonard, certainly you would think about it. If I'm LeBron, I would say, yeah, trade Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball to go get Kawhi Leonard. Like, that would be awesome. Like, do that. Or at least try to negotiate something there. And I think if they threw in, you know, a few non-guaranteed guys along with Ball and Ingram, they could get up to enough money to get Kawhi and then, you know, do that. It would still be a little bit difficult in terms of the mechanics, though, to fit in both George and LeBron on the max. Maybe one of those guys has to take slightly less than the max if they might be willing to do it. Or you're, again, hoping that the cap is going to go up, because you would have to sign LeBron and Paul George before you made that trade. But to get enough salary flotsam to make the trade, you would have to, if you wanted to make it right away in July, you would have to keep those guys on the roster, and then you wouldn't necessarily have all of the room for the max for LeBron and Paul George, depending again on the mechanics with Randle, the mechanics with Deng, etc. So that's all those are very kind of interesting considerations to think about. But to me, if I'm LeBron, the only way I'm coming is if you trade at least one of those young guys, also because Lonzo is really a terrible fit next to LeBron with the way he shot the ball so far in his career.
Yeah, it's a shame, because if Lonzo was a better shooter, that would actually make some sense. I think Lonzo can be a capable switch guy, you know, makes smart decisions, moves the ball really well. That's really the only sticking point there for me. But it's hard to unstick that with this short a time period. You know, like LeBron, unless Lonzo just like goes in there and just shoots like, you know, makes like, I don't know, 85 out of 100 threes in a row or something like that, be like, see, it's fixed. Then I can imagine him saying, hey, this isn't going to work. And this would not be the first time that LeBron James wanted to come to a situation and one of the constraints was changing over the team. For those who remember, his letter when he got to Cleveland specifically did not mention certain guys, and those certain guys were not on the team that opening night when he was back on Cleveland.
Yeah, the other thing you could say too, which would make the mechanics maybe a little easier, is, all right, we'll try it out with these young guys to start. And then if they're just not looking that good, their trade value probably goes down. But also, you know, you can trade them during the season and try to get in some more vets, whoever that might be, whether it's Leonard or whether, you know, there are plenty of other guys they can get in, more wings, they'll need a center, you know, all that stuff. Randall probably isn't the greatest fit with LeBron either. Maybe he could be a scorer off the bench or something like that. Paul George is an excellent fit with LeBron if he wants to come. Anything else that sticks out to you about like the potential LeBron acquisition, like things that they would be considerations, how they'd build the team around him?
Well, something else to note is that they would also be getting a ton of bang for their buck in terms of the room mid-level and minimums.
Yes.
Because guys are going to want to play with in LA, they'll want to play with LeBron, and they're like there have been with the Warriors, especially since they got Kevin Durant, there will be players who take a lot less money to go to that opportunity. Now, those will probably be one-year deals. It doesn't really build your asset base, but if you got LeBron James, that asset base doesn't matter as much other than getting guys who make sense around LeBron James.
Yeah, and
oh, I have one more LeBron question. As Pelinka and Magic, do you just have to play ball with him if he says, I just want to do one-year deals the whole like, for a while now? Or do you say, hey, you know, like this is, we're going to have, especially if he demands like that they overhaul certain elements of the team, maybe not the whole thing, because that would be a lot of change for not much of a commitment. Should that be what happens?
Well, maybe he says 1 year deals, but he actually says, you know, I'm here for a while. I would want to do it for longer, you know, then you probably got to trust him at his word there. It's very tough to say, you know, if we're really going to start doing stuff like stretching guys, trading away young players, maybe potentially not re-signing Julius Randle. I certainly would push for a commitment of longer than a year, but if I couldn't get it, I probably would bite the bullet and just do it. And George certainly is going to, he'll, you would think, sign on for longer than a year. Here's a question. Actually, we'll save it for after the read about whether they would want to just sign Paul George and not sign anyone else. And that read is from Sonos. Sonos has changed the way that we enjoy entertainment at home. I love the Sonos One, being able to control music with my voice, especially if we have people over. They want to hear something, use the Alexa integration. It'll just play an artist for you. And with their up and running service, their speakers are really easy to set up. But if you don't even want to bother doing that, you can have someone do it for you for free. I thought it was really useful because when they came in, they actually used an iPhone to test out how the speaker sounded in different parts of the room. And then they're able to actually optimize the sound for the specific rooms in my house. And it sounds amazing now. If you live in any major metropolitan area, their up and running service will have a trained expert deliver and set up your system absolutely free. You just order on Sonos.com and you select up and running at checkout if you qualify. As you may have noticed, Father's Day is coming up and Sonos and Spotify have you covered. We have a new URL for this one now for this special offer on Father's Day. If you go to fathersday.sonos.com, that'll get you a code for 15% off if you create a custom Spotify playlist and send it to your dad. Simply select your favorite artists and the year you were born, and then you do the same for your dad. And Spotify will generate the perfect playlist to bridge the generation gap. So you go to, again, fathersday.sonos.com and you get 15% off when you create that playlist. Playlist generator expires June 17th and terms and conditions apply. Once again, fathersday.sonos.com and get 15% off when you create your playlist. So yeah, Paul George, you know, we have talked about in the context of the Wings when we did that podcast previewing the free agent class, that a five-year deal for Paul George, even at the 30% max, you know, that's basically the Blake Griffin contract from last summer, probably doesn't look too good by the end. And George has had this knee surgery now. He's out 6 to 8 weeks. Didn't have an amazing year in Oklahoma City. Didn't have an amazing playoffs outside of a couple of games. So if you're the Lakers, just getting that one guy, it's a four-year deal instead of five, which is nice. But are you interested in just getting Paul George and that's it? Other than just, you know, having to kind of go, I mean, you still execute the plan. Maybe we can get one more free agent in 2019. So you just fill in around him just with your room mid-level and using the rest of your, you know, you're probably, if you only get George, you're looking at really only about $18 million or so in space to use around him and the room mid-level. You're going to do that, or you're going to kind of, all right, we're going to try and get into being a lower rung playoff team in the West, or would you rather just totally keep the powder dry for 2019?
Based on my current expectations of the 2019 free agent class, I think I would rather have one guy locked in than have two spots open, just because I think Paul George makes them more enticing than empty space. I could be, you know, because like, let's say it's Paul George versus Jimmy Butler. It's hard. I mean, George is 28. This will be his age 28 season coming up. He turns 29 in May of next year. I think I would rather have George than Jimmy.
I agree.
It is a close call. And so, you know, there might be certain circumstances. Let's say Kawhi, you don't trade for him, but he's available as a free agent. Whether the extension is never offered or it is never signed. Yeah, I would rather have Kawhi Leonard. But again, maybe the health issue, but maybe that's not clear either. And the scarcity of wings makes him more valuable. So yeah, I would consider that. And they probably wouldn't have enough money. I wouldn't necessarily consider this of doing the kind of troll offer sheets or anything like that. I was thinking about, you know, like, oh, like what the hell, just throw some money at Nikola Jokic and it probably doesn't happen, but maybe make his agent happy, something like that. I don't think they'd have enough money for it. So yeah, I think I would, but you're right that it is a harder decision maybe than some think, just because the prospect of, well, what is that team with him? And then what happens if he makes it less likely, either due to a disappointing year or whatever, or an injury, or heaven forbid, that they get somebody else? Because it's certainly a risk. I just think that he's better than the second bananas that I expect to be available in 2019.
Yeah, and it's not worthless to just have a team that's actually like making the playoffs again. You know, I think if they, let's say they bring back KCP with the remainder of their cap space, they bring back Randall on what's hopefully a reasonable contract. They use the room mid-level on a starting center who's probably not going to close games for them anyway. You get some more growth from the young guys. They played pretty well down the end of last year. Really, the only guy you'd be losing off that team would be Brooke Lopez. Maybe even Lopez would just come back for the room mid-level, and then, you know, they would at least have early bird rights. Or I'm sorry, they would still have full bird rights on him the next year, with the kind of thought that, hey, maybe you can just continue to stick around as our starting center, even if we go into free agency again. So yeah, that's not bad. I think I agree with you. I would probably want to sign him. And it's not like Paul George is not going to have other multiple max offers. It does seem that, you know, if I'm Paul, the only place I would rather go, I think, would be the Sixers in terms of like trying to win games. I still think that there's a pretty decent chance that Lakers team, if he goes there, could be somewhat similar to the way the Oklahoma City team looked this year, maybe a little bit worse, but then you still have, of course, more flexibility to get better in the future. And who knows what happens with LeBron? Maybe they could try to get into the LeBron sweepstakes again in 2019 too, you know, if he goes back to Cleveland on a one-year deal or something like that. So yeah, I would go ahead and do that.
Oh, I had one I wanted to ask you about as the second banana rankings go. What about Kyrie in 2019? Like, if you were Kawhi Leonard, would you rather play with Paul George or Kyrie?
Oh, probably Kyrie, you would say, although we don't know where Kyrie is going to be at that point in his career health-wise.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, there are the big free agents unrestricted for 2019 as of now are Irving, who will be 27 as of that time, Kawhi would be 28, Jimmy Butler 29, and Klay Thompson 29, although it's looking like Thompson is likely to stick around in Golden State. You know, so that's not an amazing group. Kemba Walker would be available as well, Eric Bledsoe, but that's not the type of guys they're probably really talking about here. So I agree with you. I mean, it's somewhat similar maybe to the way when the Celtics got Al Horford, we're thinking, yeah, you know what, that's probably going to be a bad contract by the end. I'm certainly not thinking that way as much anymore. Horford has aged beautifully so far in Boston, but you kind of have to get that first guy to get the ball rolling and make this team at least somewhat relevant. They've been out in the wilderness now. You know, their last playoff appearance was 2013.
So with the Lakers pending free agents, I think the easiest thing to do is just say, well, it depends on what happens with everybody else. I mean, KCP, other than Randall, KCP, Brooke Lopez, Isaiah, Channing Frye. You know, I think there's a case to be made that any of those guys could come back for the right reasons, but it's just that the circuit, they're not the priority. So you just kind of have to see where things go. And then their non-guarantees, Zubac, Thomas Bryant, Tyler Ennis, they're sort of dependent, but their decision is earlier. What I would probably do, from what I have seen, and we talked about this a little bit, we did them for the prospect stuff a while ago, I haven't seen enough from any of those guys to say, hey, we need to make sure we keep this guy on roster. So might say, hey, we'd love to bring you back and, you know, basically replace your hold with a minimum. We should have enough roster spots for some of you guys. Maybe we can bring you back. But I wouldn't be sitting there going, we have to pick this up and lose a little bit of caps.
Yeah. Now there's always the chance chance that the player could get claimed on waivers, of course. Zubac, his guarantee date is actually June 30th. Now, what we're talking about with him is the difference between the $815,000 empty roster slot, I'm sorry, $830,000 empty roster slot this year versus his salary, which will be about $1.5 million. So do you want to just, actually, if they do waive him, now the good news for them is that like teams without cap space wouldn't be, or an exception wouldn't be able to, or a trade exception wouldn't be able to claim him, be, although the trade exception would be exceedingly small because his contract was for 3 years. So it's not just a minimum contract that can just be claimed with the minimum exception. So there would be fewer teams that would actually claim him. But I think he's someone that teams would be, and he's shown a little bit of promise at times. But it could be an indicator if he does get waived that they are pretty confident in their chances in that. And we talked about how tight the math may be that, you know, they might need that extra $700,000 or so.
It also might be possible for them to have an understanding with another team because his guarantee date is so early that they could say, hey, we'll keep him, but if we need this money, would you be interested in him? And they'll go, yeah, sure. And then you just trade him to Orlando or whoever that is, you know, just that other team that has an exception or something else. Like, you can do it by being proactive without cutting him.
And Thomas Bryan, although we saw little of him with the big club this year, had an absolutely dominating year in the G League. So you would imagine they would want to hold on to him as well. What else do we have to talk about with these guys from a nuts and bolts perspective?
Well, they do have the 25th pick, which they acquired in the amazing for them Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance trade for Isaiah Frye and a bunch of other stuff. I mean, that worked out really, really well for them to clear Clarkson's money is making a lot of this stuff possible. And then they have 47. I would say one of the other things they should be looking for pretty much no matter what this team looks like. I mean, star talent is obviously number one, but I would like to see more floor spacing because they just need that. I mean, especially if Randall's going to be coming back. I like Randall's fit with a lot of the other players, but you need spacing around that. And then another thing is the evaluation process with Brandon Ingram. What is he defensively? Is he a three defensively? Ideally, is he a four? Is he just a forward in a switching system? Because if he's a part of your future, then you need to figure out who you want next.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned Frye, because he had that appendectomy, we didn't really see play on this team very much until the very end of the season. But he's a guy, I've been saying this for a long time, that just having a backup shooting center can really be helpful for the development of some of these young guys. This team, he would be an excellent fit next to Julius Randle offensively. Just to give a little more spacing to Brandon Ingram's drives. Ingram made great progress as a driver this year. Lonzo Ball, his finishing at the rim was some of the worst in recorded history this season. It'd give him a little more space to work with, a pick and pop guy to work with Lonzo. It could be pretty helpful. So I think if they could find a way to bring him back, it would be great if they don't have their big free agent score and they will have full bird rights on him. I mean, if they really wanted to, it's possible, Danny, that maybe just the most efficient use of their money would be to stay over the cap and bring back most of these guys, you know, because they can actually pay them a little bit more. And it would be a way to maintain flexibility and kind of get a little bit more bang for your buck because you have full bird rights on a lot of these guys. You can just stay over the cap, use that to pay them kind of an exorbitant 1 year salary. So you could still hopefully be good this year. And convince them to just sign that 1 year deal, whether that's KCP, they can only pay him 120% of what he made last year, but that should be close to enough, you'd imagine. You know, that would be over $20 million. Brook Lopez, he has a $34 million hold, so you'd probably reduce that by bringing him back, but you know, maybe you could pay him a 1 year deal for like $15 million or something like that. And Isaiah, they really would have a much easier way to pay him on a 1 year deal than anyone else would, unless it was a cap space team. So that might be a way to maintain the flexibility and still give them their most competitive team, is to be able to exceed the cap to re-sign a lot of these guys who are coming off the books in theory this year, if in fact they don't get their primary target.
And I was thinking about what you just said in the context of how the rules are kind of different for the Lakers, because in other circumstances you would say, oh, if you're choosing 2019 over 2018, largely that would be because other players choosing not them. You could say, oh, well, just run it back with your young guys because this year the Lakers have their own pick. You know, you could get a better draft pick, give those guys a chance for development. But the Lakers, because they're going after these big fish, it makes sense that they would want to be more competitive to say, hey, look at what a difference you can make. And so then that makes bringing Lopez, KCP, those kind of guys back a lot more logical than it would be for, let's say, like the Hawks or something like that.
Let's talk about Randle a little bit more. I mean, just in a vacuum now, his restricted free agent negotiations, what would your offer be to him? We've talked about this a lot of the free agents here of on July 1st, what is your final offer on July 1st to Julius Randle to say, we want to keep you out of restricted free agency, just sign this now?
It's worth noting that if they came to that sort of an agreement and it was for a value above his hold, they could just wait to sign it. So then you would get the benefit of that. So for me with Randle, I think of him as a valued rotation player, maybe a kind of six-man type, more than a definite starter. And also, I think that the market will just bear that out, not necessarily because the winner's curse, it only takes one team to love a guy, but there just are not that many teams with cap space. They're going to be going after big fish. Some of them are not even going to use that cap space on free agents. So I would be thinking more in the range of his cap hold. You could structure it differently. So that would actually be an average value somewhere around 13 to 14. And you could structure that in a couple of different ways depending on what happens. I would actually consider, if it was like a four-year deal, thinking about front-loading it or at least making it closer to flat if you can, just to throw a little bit on that year. But yeah, something in the $13 to $14 million a year range in terms of average value would be where I would
offer. There was reporting indicating that the Lakers were offered by Randle's representation a deal starting at what Randle's cap hold would have been, which is about $12 million. So that would have been a contract, probably just off the top of my head, but you know, in the 4 years, $55 million type of range. Ultimately, the Lakers turned that down at the time. But I would have to say that Randle had a good enough year last year that he's going to feel like, well, and especially now that he's made it through another year without injury, there's uncertainty. He feels like the price is going up for him. Now, there's also the market realities, but there's also the fact that he is an asset and the Lakers need him and he could sign the qualifying offer and potentially leave. You know, he's not totally without leverage. But this does, it feels like the range that they're going to be in is, you know, he might be asking for $17 million a year. As you mentioned, you know, it's kind of tough to start him because of where he is defensively. He can switch, but he can't protect the rim. So he's kind of got to play the five on both ends. He can't shoot at all. But he's also a guy who I actually think really fits into modern basketball, not only his ability to switch, but his ability to attack switches on the other end. I mean, he's a guy who can dribble under the ball for himself. You get a smaller guy on him, he's going to just bludgeon that guy in the post. And we saw him do it even against, you know, conventional power forwards and even some centers, not to mention if he gets a smaller guy on him. So in today's NBA, I think he's a guy who could be pretty valuable as a change of pace. He's like, oh, you're going to switch us? Well, we got this guy who's going to just truck you. So I don't really know what I think his value is. Usually I have a pretty good idea. You know, I wouldn't, and I think he's an eye of the beholder kind of guy as well with the defensive limitations, but also how well he played offensively and his very specific skills. You know, you could see it wouldn't just kind of in a vacuum, $16 million a year for him wouldn't be crazy to me. You know, just as far as like the type of player that he's been, I think he's taken some step forwards. On the other hand, the realities of the market, where else is he getting that kind of an offer? Is he really a starter? Those concerns that you mentioned, that makes me kind of think it's more in the $12 million a year. So I think that's kind of the range that it's going to be, the $12 to $17 million. And maybe, you know, you can mess with that in terms of, all right, we'll give you a player option if you're going to take a couple million less a year, or you know, you can kind of mess around with that to get the annual figure that you need if you're the Lakers. But yeah, and I guess the last thing too,
okay,
one more point here really quickly is, if you get your guys in 2018, then it's easier to just kind of pay him a little bit more. If you're looking towards 2019 now, then you squeezing on Randle makes a lot more sense. And we could even see a contract that dips in 2019 and then goes back up in 2020 and beyond. But yeah, sorry, what was your point?
I wanted to play a little game with Randle, which is I'm gonna give you the teams that have more money than the mid-level exception. And we're going to talk about whether he makes sense, not necessarily to whether they would want him, but just like whether he makes sense on that team. Okay, Chicago. I don't love the fit there.
Yeah, I mean, with like offensively, I think he's actually awesome with Markkanen. And then both of those guys actually, you know, neither of them can protect the rim, but both of those guys are actually like better switch guys than you would expect. So maybe we're just, all right, we're going to switch everything now. You know, Chris Dunn is big enough for that. Zach LaVine, perhaps less so. But not terrible, but he doesn't seem like a Chicago kind of like personality necessarily that they're going to get into restricted free agency. So that seems low likelihood, but I don't think that's a crazy bad fit though.
Sure. Sixers, no. That's, yes. That's pretty easy. Even though he would be a very interesting backup center for them, that's not where they're going with their caps. Hawks, I just don't think the timing is right.
Yeah, and we'll see who they draft too. If they draft a big, which seems likely, then you know, they've been linked to Bagley, as we said. You know, if they draft Doncic, then maybe they would think about it.
Maybe. But they could use that space to squeeze other teams. They could do a lot of things. Dallas, connections to the area, obviously, because he grew up there, would be a fascinating kind of fit as a much better Dwight Powell. You know, like offensively, Dwight Powell doesn't protect the rim much either. And Randall is much more gifted, though he doesn't have a jump shot. So I think they would consider it, but I don't think he's the best fit for them either.
Yeah, okay fit with Dirk, though, as a shooter in the front court, maybe. But yeah, that's it's not ideal. I mean, who else you got here?
Pacers, I don't think he fits with Miles Turner that well. Just this, it's a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Kings, I don't know what the hell they're doing, so maybe.
Yeah, I mean, they need more scoring, so, you know, it wouldn't be a shocker.
Yeah. Nets, I actually think that's really interesting. It doesn't necessarily fit what Adkins is doing, and I like Jared Allen a lot, but, I mean, maybe. And then Utah, I don't see that either, with Gobert.
No, and this is another interesting question, is between him, Parker, and Aaron Gordon, you know, who would you be prioritizing it if you're a team?
For me, with most teams, I think I would be going with Gordon, just because I think he can be, he's a more a clean cut cog in a machine. Like, you know, just not going to be your lead offensive player, not going to be your lead defensive player, but can fit in. You can make an argument that he's been misutilized a little bit in Orlando just because those teams have been so weird. But I mean, Jabari has higher upside. We've talked about that a lot. And if I were closer, you know, like if Randall could be an interesting piece in the puzzles. But I would say for most situations, I'd probably go with.
Yeah. And you'd probably have Clint Capella above all those guys, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't mention Phoenix as a possible destination, did you? What do you think of that?
Oh, yeah. I didn't mention Phoenix. For Randall? God, the Island of Misfit Toys in terms of big men that they already have.
Yeah, again, it's not another one. It's not impossible. And also worth noting, too, that some of these teams, you can just make multiple restricted free agent offer sheets. If they get matched, then they just move on to the next guy.
Sure.
You know, there's,
right.
But yeah, you know, I mean, I think of the really kind of four. What about Randall or Yusuf Nurkic? I think I'd probably rather have Randall than Nurkic.
On most teams, I would rather have Randall, yeah, just because I think he fits the modern game a little bit more. I think Nurkic is a good player, and his role in Portland's defense might be underappreciated. But, I mean, there's still this question about where he fits in on a playoff team. I guess that's true with both those guys. But, yeah, I guess I'd probably go with Randall. God, Nurkic's agents must be freaking out right now.
Well, that assumes that they listen to the show. Are you just saying in general?
It's true.
They must be.
Oh, yeah, just because there's so much volatility with him. I mean, it only takes one team, but it does take one team.
Yeah, but you know, I'd have Randall probably fourth or fifth in the pecking order of restricted free agents here. And that's not even necessarily counting Nikola Jokic. So, yeah, that's not a great place to be in as far as getting an offer sheet. I mean, I think that was kind of the point of your exercise, which I agree with.
Oh, one other thing just to mention throwing out, it would be very hard to sign and trade Randall because they would basically want expiring money back. Unless, and this is an interesting possibility, it takes long enough with everybody else that they already have, like, let's say it's LeBron and Paul George locked up. Then, while they could also just keep Randall, they could move him to another team and get back players you think are a better fit.
Yeah, or even re-signing him, and then you could use him as the human trade exception around the trade deadline as well. I mean, they really, if they bring in... And it would be easier around
the trade deadline, too,
because they'll have some minimum contracts. They'll have whoever they sign with the room exception. But, yeah, it'd be tough to get enough salary, the same thing as we talked about with Boston.
They could be I haven't run the actual math yet, but they could be the second team, I believe it would be the second team in modern NBA history to use cap space and pay the luxury tax in the same season. The first being when LeBron went back to Cleveland.
Yeah, that was quite the job by their team at that point. All right, let's do another read here. Unless you got anything else you want to talk about with these guys? I think that's about all I've got.
Nope, that's about it. I mean, just mentioning that it's going to be another year until Ingram is even extension eligible. So that's good. They have a long time to evaluate this group. And I think we should just acknowledge this significant possibility that if they got one or more of these big players, that some of their young guys are moving as well because they just might not be as good of fits. I think Lakers fans are thinking, oh, we're going to get LeBron and he's going to want to play with all these young guys. Well, recent past is that some of those young guys are going to be gone.
Yeah, and Lonzo in particular. I think Ingram, they would love to keep around and he really would fit in. Although Ingram was going to have to find himself a jumper fast if he's playing with LeBron. and Paul George. But, you know, having that type of athleticism and length, could just an absolute defensive monster. All right, as y'all know, Father's Day is coming up. Are you trying to find that perfect gift? Omaha Steaks delivers hand-trimmed, flash-frozen, and vacuum-sealed meats directly to your door in Omaha Steaks cooler. We actually went to a party on Saturday, and it was one of those parties where you kind of just bring your own meat to grill. And so I brought the Omaha Steaks stuff, and suffice to say, a lot of people were very jealous. I, as a non-selfish person, only ate some of the stuff that we brought, and everyone else was very impressed. And right now, Omaha Steaks is offering my listeners a limited time Father's Day package for only $49.99. At 78% off, this is an amazing deal. The way to get started with them is you go to omahasteaks.com. Before you even check out, search Capspace, and that'll get you this Father's Day package, which includes two filet mignons, two sirloins. Those are the ones that we made at the barbecue. Four chicken fried steaks. Haven't had a chance to try those yet since I'm on the low-carb diet before the wedding, but looking forward to getting to those. Two boneless pork chops. Four all-beef Omaha Steak burgers. Four jumbo franks. 12 ounces of all-beef meatballs. Those are fantastic. A pound of steakhouse fries. Four caramel apple tartlets. And one Omaha Steaks seasoning packet. Plus, you get an additional four Omaha Steaks burgers free with purchase. Once again, this package for only $49.99 is available when you go to omahasteaks.com. Type that Capspace code. Easy to remember. We've been talking about that this whole time here with the Lakers in the search bar. And add the Father's Day package to your cart. Once again, omahasteaks.com. Make sure you type that Capspace code in the search bar and let them know that you came from us. Don't wait. This offer ends soon before Father's Day. So the Memphis Grizzlies finished a disappointing 22-60 this season. We did see a lot of young guys play for this team. Some bright spots, some perhaps a little bit dimmer. But where would you like to start with this team in terms of how their young guys played this season?
I actually want to do their fundamentals briefly, just because it's been
so
long.
I always forget that.
So
that you want to do that first.
Yeah, negative 6.4 net rating was 26th in the league, 27th in offense, 24th in defense. And the place that I want to start is actually the player, the rookie who played the most minutes in the NBA this season, Dylan Brooks. Brooks was a surprising kind of just stalwart in the rotation, played in all 82 games, started 74. And there were times where I liked him as just kind of like a smaller piece in a bigger machine. He did get a lot of opportunities just because Memphis's perimeter rotation was so rough this year. But I like how he consistently competes on defense. He hit 36% of his threes, which is good. I'd be happy with that number moving forward. And so I thought he had a good head on his shoulders. I don't think he's like a perennial starter on a good team, but he can certainly be a part of a rotation.
Yeah, and to get a player like that in the second round is impressive. For Brooks, yeah.
Oh, we should mention that he is an older rookie. This was his age 22
right.
season.
Right. And for the Canadian, Dylan Brooks, since people like it when we say people's names more often, 18.5% usage. So that's not bad. A little bit below average in terms of true shooting. Didn't get to the foul line much. It mostly operated as a dependent player, though he did have a couple of big games where he blew up hitting a bunch of threes. Spot ups were his most used possession type. And he was actually pretty effective there. 1.09 points per possession. That was 76th percentile, especially on a team this offensively limited. Not bad. What really dragged down his efficiency was 227 possessions in the pick and roll, scored only 156 points on those. So 0.69 points per possession. That is one of the worst marks in the NBA. 14th percentile for a guy who had that many possessions. And then again, this is a team that was so limited, but you know, his passes just did not yield a great shooting percentage. Amazingly, the Grizzlies shot 6 out of 31 on passes by Brooks to spot-up shooters. So that could be an indication that, you know, A, they have bad shooters, but B, that he's throwing some flaming bags to guys at the end of possessions, and it's just, you know, making it pretty tough there.
Another challenging element of his efficiency. So Brooks took 12% of his shots from long two. That's actually solid. I would be okay with that, but he shot below 30% on those. And then 34% from 10 to 16 feet, which is more, you know, like straight mid-range. And, you know, those numbers aren't terrible. You just want to reduce the apart they are in the game. And I think he's on the right path to making that happen. He did shoot 34% of his shots this year from three, which is good. I'd like to see that a little bit higher for him.
Yeah, and as we mentioned with his pick and roll struggles, certainly encouraging for a guy like him that he's able to even like run enough pick and roll. But his shooting off the dribble out of pick and roll was really bad. Only 25 out of 83 on those shots, 30%. Encouraging, though, that he actually was able to get to the basket on 34% of his pick-and-roll possessions and finished about league average on those plays, 1.06 points per possession. Pretty good, especially, again, on this team that struggled so much offensively. I mean, and I think that's one of the big themes of all these Memphis players is, you know, they really just had to, were pushed so far outside of their comfort zone, especially down the end. You know, once Conley went out, Andrew Harrison missed a ton of time as well. He actually matured. We'll talk about him in a little bit, but he matured into a decent backup point guard type of player. But then he even was out at the end of the year. And so it's just guys who had to do so much. Some of the lineups that were being played were like, you know, Jamichael Green at the three and Jarrell Martin at the four. And so it's especially offensively, it was good in one sense that these guys got to stretch their legs, but bad in that they're not really working within a real NBA ecosystem, so we can see what they can do, you know, when you're actually trying to play winning basketball.
What did you think about Brooks defensively? I thought his effort was good. I would like to see him improve with time, get a little bit stronger. I think that would really help as well. But, you know, I think he can, I think on that end, he can help himself, which is definitely important.
Yeah, you know, he's got a strong build, which is good. So he's got some switchability. He's not an unbelievable athlete, not a quick twitch guy. Pretty low in terms of block rate, only 0.7% block rate, which is, for reference, is below what Mario Chalmers was and Tyreke Evans were this year. So it's really more kind of about his strength and like adequate feet than it is that he can actually make guys uncomfortable at all. And not a particularly impressive steal rate for him either. So I think he could be a solid cog in the machine, but if he's your number one option on the wing, you know, that's probably not an excellent one. Should we move on here, or you got anything else on him?
No, I think that's enough. Do you want to go to Harrison? I mean, we already brought him up a little bit, and I thought this was a really nice season for him in terms of being a rotation player moving forward.
Yeah, and the number one thing, Harrison, even as a two-point shooter in college, was a horrible two-point shooter on that great 2015 Kentucky team. But he took a step forward, 3.9 three-point attempts per 36 minutes, shot 33%. That is actually like adequate, especially since he's got to take a lot of those off the dribble. You know, certainly a guy who wasn't getting guarded that much, but started to make some strides in terms of having to be guarded. And then on two-pointers, 47%. That's a lot better than he's been so far in his career at any level. Showed some passing vision. He's got size at 6'5", and a good enough point guard handle. So he played even some with Mike Conley at the two the year before, which we hated. But I think that shows some of his defensive chops. And he's a guy who, I don't see him being a good enough offensive player to have starter potential, but last year was his age 23 season, and I thought he provided adequate backup point guard play, which I did not expect from him coming up. The problem was he started a lot, but he played at the level of an adequate backup point guard.
And also, so he was effective in pick and roll. He in overall offense, the Grizzlies scored about a point per possession, 0.957, a little bit higher than that on his passes and a little bit lower on his shots, but still being at close to a point per possession on his shots is great compared to what the concerns were. And when you think about Memphis's limited offensive talent, he could potentially be more effective just by having teammates that are better at converting the opportunities that are created. For example, like they had a 0.9 points per possession when he passed on spot ups to pick and rolls. I mean, that should be a higher yeah. number.
Well, it's better just than, because it's better those than are six generally out of 31 like Brooks was.
That's true. But so yeah, so you have those sorts of things. But I've been impressed with Harrison. Just, yeah, as a kind of playing within himself, not being as aggressive. The turnover rate, I mean, was always something that I was going to be concerned about with him. I felt like that was better this year. I haven't actually checked it compared to last year. But I think that just watching him, it was fewer of those kind of like head scratchers. And yeah, his turnover rate did drop by 2%. So that's better. And yeah, I thought it was a very encouraging season for him. I don't, you know, the timing might not necessarily work in terms of like, will he always, you know, kind of worth it to have for next year? But then after that, you know, do you really want to pay him? Like, do you want to lock in with that? But I liked what he's brought. And so this was his age 23 season as well.
Yeah, and he is on a contract next year, non-guaranteed for the minimum until the league-wide cutdown date in January. So he's in, certainly I think they'll want to keep him around. And you know, he's not a great offensive backup point guard, but as a guy who does enough on offense and then is a quality defensive option, had to feel pretty good about him. Where do you want to go next?
Let's do Wayne Seldon. You stay on the perimeter. Seldon, I thought, was really a missing piece early in the season, and then he helped them kind of reach a little bit of their stride just as a capable two guard. And really for me with him, like I think he could be a part of the rotation. He is actually has about half guarantee for next year, and I would certainly keep him around, but I wouldn't be saying, oh, he's your shooting guard or even your backup two of the future, even though I think he has the capability of being a rotation player.
Yeah, they actually were talking about him maybe starting this year, either him or Ben McLemore, and Ben McLemore didn't quite work out, but Seldon, you know, he was another one of these guys who was felled by a mysterious quad injury for most of the year, ended up playing about 600 minutes or so this season. Another guy who maybe had more than you'd want to give him as a pick and roll player, but he did show the ability to get to the basket. I mean, he's not a guy who's like crossing guys up with advanced ball handling moves, but on a straight line, he's got strength, especially if he's up against a guy his size. He can be really aggressive, get his shoulder past the guy, and get to the rim a little bit. From a shooting perspective, 55% on twos is solid and about league average at the rim. And then he dropped 40% of his threes, 49 out of 122. He's got a big body. I think he's an adequate defensive option. And so if he can continue to shoot the ball like that and have some selective drives, you know, I actually think he could become a starter. I'm not counting on that necessarily, just due to his pedigree and the injury problems he had last year. But I think he's shown some flashes in his career. He also had a wonderful summer league in 2017. He's shown enough flashes in his career to think that he could be a starter, and it's not out of the question that he could be their starting shooting guard next year.
Yeah, we'll see what they get in the draft, in free agency. I mean, they're not going to have a lot to work with. There's the whole prospect of what happens with Tyreek. But yeah, I see Seldon as a part of it, and then you get next year to evaluate him as well. There was a brief moment in time when Kobe Simmons looked like a revelation. He had that nice little run, including a game actually against the Warriors where he looked good.
That moment in time was what, one game?
It was like two games, yeah. And we talked, it was like 115 and 60. We're like, hey, Kobe Simmons is looking really good. He was this talented guy. He went to Arizona, right? Yeah, went to Arizona, and then, he another guy who just had too much on his.
Yeah, and the three-point shooting regressed to where he was only 28% for the season. Another guy who played around 600 minutes. But as a guy who was undrafted and on a two-way contract, you know, we don't need to spend that much time on him. Still someone that will be interesting to keep an eye on this year in summer league. He's got a very raw game, but very, very quick feet and pretty athletic, although he's never really been able to put that together necessarily into great finishing. But someone to keep an eye on, the exact type of guy you would think you would want on a two-way contract. And it showed enough this year, flashed enough that he's someone that we're at least talking about when he's on a two-way contract. But I don't know that we need to spend that much time on him. Deontay Davis, what did you make of his season?
I mean, he still is, you know, physically capable, you know, athlete, like as a jumper, but I just wonder really what his role is on a successful team. He's a decent shot blocker, but not like the dominant defensive overall force that I kind of hoped he would be. Also, his rebounding overall isn't exactly where I want it to be. Not that it's bad, it's just not, it doesn't really stand out. And then offensively, his game's to me pretty vanilla.
Did shoot 60% from the field this year, but my hope for him, why I kind of liked him coming out of Michigan State, was I thought that he would be someone who would have above average athleticism at the center position, really get up and finish some alley-oops. And he can do that. I think he's still a solid finisher, has good touch, developing mid-range game, shall we say. You know, not something you want to be relying on quite yet. Whether he can stretch that out to three or not, I'm skeptical of that at this point. It's got a ways to go there. But both from an awareness and shot blocking standpoint defensively, the ability to move his feet in pick and roll defense, and then finally, you know, really getting up there for like the highest alley-oops. I don't know whether I just misevaluated him coming out of college or whether those foot injuries that he had his first year really seemed to sap his athleticism, or maybe he just never really got into great shape after that. But he has not had the type of bounce that I think he needs to really be a factor as anything more than kind of, you know, a blasé backup big.
Jarrell Martin had quite the turnaround last year. It sounded like in the preliminary reporting during training camp that he was not only going to get his fourth year option decline, but also get cut. Then he gets his option picked up, makes the team, and starts their second game of the year. Ended up starting 36 games, playing in 73, and I just think of him as not a rotation big, but a fourth or fifth guy that you can have on the roster. Doesn't really move the needle a lot. I mean, was an absolutely, I remember him as being a really good rebounder as a prospect, but that hasn't translated all the way in the pros, and he's never really popped to me as an NBA player.
Yeah, the thought that was that he might be able to have a nice face-up game, attack slower power forwards off the dribble, but those slower power forwards don't really exist that much anymore. And he's really probably the poster child of the Grizzlies tanking, just barfing up a lot of long twos, as Zach Lowe would say. 32% of his offense came on spot-ups, and he shot 35% on those spot-ups. Did get out to three just slightly, to the point where his adjusted field goal percentage was 42% on those spot-ups, but that's still pretty miserable. And just one of my memories of him in that 61-point drubbing in Charlotte was just jacking up a shot at the moment it touched his hands from 17 feet. You know, we saw a lot of that this Grizzlies team, and, you know, he's not that level of shooter. And, you know, I'm just not sure. I guess he's like can kind of move his feet a little bit defensively. I'm just, what does he do? I don't really see it at this point.
And we're getting to the point where there are more big men that are capable than available roster spots. So you have to have a pretty positive case moving forward. I mean, certainly he's guaranteed for this coming season. You can keep him around unless somebody really impresses in training camp. But I mean, it's hard to say why him instead of somebody else until he proves it. Maybe he could go to Europe or something like that and develop his game a little bit more, come back at 27 or so. But I just don't see it right now.
And he shot 35% on threes. That's like, okay. Maybe there's some potential there. But unless he's really going to be, you know, maybe you could see him as sort of a Darrell Arthur type of guy. But he's not going to be the type of defender that Darrell Arthur was earlier in his career. But that's kind of, you know, I see his game kind of along those lines, maybe a little bit better off the dribble than Arthur. But that's if the defense really comes around and he hasn't shown much as a quality defensive option. And he was started a lot of games. He was third on this team in minutes, playing 1,661 minutes and started 36 games. But, you know, really, he's a replacement level guy at this point and not someone who's like flashed enough to where I'm like, oh, he's gonna really, you know, this is his age 23 season where you think he's gonna turn the corner. I mean, you could see him maybe becoming an adequate backup power forward in time if the jumper gets a little bit better, if the defense gets a little bit better. But, you know, I don't see any one skill that he has that pops at all to me.
That seems like a worthy transition into Ivan Rabb, somebody who I saw a couple times in person at Cal. He played with Jaylen Brown, and what struck me then still strikes me now, which is just like he has a decent head on his shoulders, but he just never seemed like a professional, like an NBA caliber athlete. And so then it's sitting there going, well, how's this going to work? And, you know, he was reasonably efficient in terms of PER and true shooting this year, 60% true shooting, 16.6 PER on 17% usage. But when he played 500 minutes in the season. I never really saw this like dominant player or somebody who really had a high ceiling. I just saw a guy who exists.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of got like a little bit of Ed Davis to his game, maybe, if you squint real hard. Davis, of course, has had trouble finding a fit, but it has turned himself into a relentless offensive rebounder. Davis is a little more bounce than Rabb did, especially when he was younger. You know, still really a tweener between the four and the five defensively. Rabb, a better shooting touch than someone like Davis, and maybe he can get it out to three, but his ability to shoot okay on long twos from, or even not long twos, just kind of medium range twos from like 15 feet, it isn't really that valuable at this point. But, you know, he did have a 11.6% offensive rebounds in his 516 minutes, 24% defensive rebounds. That's outstanding. In the G League, where he spent quite a bit of time, had another 500 minutes there. And he was, again, excellent on the glass. You know, that's probably really his best skill at this point. 12% offensive rebounds in the G League, 25% defensive rebounds. Blocked some shots in the G League as well, 4.9% block rate. That didn't translate as much to the NBA level, where he blocked only 2.4% of opponent twos. Obviously, he had a much bigger size advantage in the G League. So someone, again, who, you know, maybe could get there as a backup center. When he's not going to get, because he doesn't really have the heft to fight with the biggest centers either. You know, a guy who can like be a plugger and give you some minutes, but again, not someone who really sticks out to me that much. I mean, worth noting, he had a 17 PR. Like, that's not bad. You know, I think he could put up a few numbers, but it's just, again, other than rebounding, like, what is his real standout skill? And rebounding is, you know, less important than it's ever been at this point in time. And I don't think he's quite quick enough feet-wise to be a switch guy defensively.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So I have hopes for him. Unlike a lot of these other players for Memphis, he has team control. in terms of a team option after the season. A lot of the guys, Seldon, Harrison, Deontay Davis, Jarrell Martin, those guys are all going to be restricted if they get qualifying offers. Rabb and Brooks both have non-guarantees, or, you know, team could have another year at the minimum after this year. So that makes it makes life easier on Memphis. They get more evaluation time for those players. And we'll have to see how they want to balance these roster spots. This is going to be different than last year, where they actually, like, they cut Rade Zagorich, even though he had 2 years of guaranteed money. I think that they could end up doing that with 1 year, you know, like whoever, if they get somebody who outpaces them. But generally speaking, I think they're going to be throwing these guys in the mix and just seeing who stands out again this year.
All right, are we forgetting about anyone, or are we done here?
I think that's good. And that is the last of our prospect. I mean, it took, I don't know, did it, it took,
we started doing it at the end of the season, eventually, so yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I am happy that we did this, and I definitely look forward to doing it again next year. But yeah, I mean, we'll see where Memphis is. I mean, it's an interesting place to end it, just because they have so many guys that I just feel generally apathetic on. But at least they have a lot of guys, so that's,
yeah,
good.
Maybe some
and,
they, will
and
pop.
It's not like they're, yeah, paying those. Yeah, and I mean, we didn't mention Macklemore while he is about the same,
oh,
age
God,
as these guys, because
no,
he's,
let's just,
this was
just stop.
Macklemore's age 24
I,
season.
I can't.
No, I can't. I just want, because. I just wanted to mention that, you know, that he's about the same age, but no, we're not talking,
yeah,
about him.
I think he's had enough time to show what he is at this point.
And we didn't have to talk about Bryce Johnson, so yay.
Yeah. No, the Bryce Johnson, who, like, I think he, I tweeted out a couple clips of him during that 61-point game, and I think, like, that was actually, like, one where he, like, tipped the ball into his own basket, another one where, like, a guy was coming down at a fast break, and Johnson just, like, sprinted away from him and let him get a layup. And then I think that was the last time that he played. I think they released him after that. But this has been a useful exercise, I think, for all these teams, just to kind of set a primer and give us an idea of these guys going into summer league, where we're going to be watching guys like this very closely. So thanks again for listening.
Oh, let me plug. I don't know exactly when it's going to come out, but my next offseason preview is going to be the Indiana Pacers. So I wanted to get that out before we hear about some of the options, just because I didn't think I was going to have a chance to rewrite it. So that'll be out. They have a really fascinating offseason, as you and I have alluded to a number of times on the show, and we'll preview them later on for Dunked.
All right, and thanks again to Sonos for sponsoring today's program. They've changed the way that I've been enjoying both music and home theater. Father's Day is coming up, and Sonos and Spotify have you covered. If you go to the link fathersday.sonos.com, that'll get you a code for 15% off when you create a custom Spotify playlist to send to dad. Simply select your favorite artists and the year you were born, then do the same for your dad, and Spotify will generate the perfect playlist to bridge the generation gap. Go to fathersday.sonos.com, create that playlist, and you get 15% off. The playlist generator expires June 17th, and terms and conditions apply.